Welcome to Underdog Stuff with Gregory Neesmith, live radio show and podcast. Thank you for hanging out with the underdogs and talking politics, culture, and personal life. Enjoy this new episode. Welcome to Underdog Stuff with Gregory Neesmith, live radio show and podcast.
Hi.
That we do here every week on WHCR 90.3 FM, the voice of Harlem. And what we do every week here is your source for coverage, opinions, and coaching of the uns.
The uns?
The unbelievable.
Okay.
The unavoidable.
Uh-huh.
The unjust.
Uh-huh.
The underrated.
Uh-huh.
The uninhibited.
Yep.
The uns. You get it by now. Underdog stuff in politics, culture, and personal life. And to take you on that journey each week, you have me, your host, Gregory Neesmith, entrepreneur, coach, consultant, and on-air personality. And sitting to my left, for those who are watching on Facebook Live, waving to the camera that we know where the camera is. Sitting here, as always, holding it down, Asha Davis.
Hi.
Award-winning advertising exec.
Yeah.
Comedy writer.
Yeah.
And proud Torontonian.
Canadian.
Shout out to our brothers and sisters to the north. And also, as part of the Underdog Stuff team, there is Kirsten Magwood, who will join us shortly, and she is a TV producer and film director representing Chocolate City, but living now in Harlem, just like you do, Asha, and just like I do.
Yeah.
Very cool. And we don't want to go on this journey alone today, so for folks who want to join the conversation, you have us for the next 2 hours.
Summer hours.
I love it. Summer hours from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can join the conversation at area code 212-650-6903. That's area code 212-650-6903. Or for those who like to watch.
It's one in the afternoon, man.
But it's happy hour or happy time someplace around the world. For those who like to watch, and there's some people who like to watch, they can do that on facebook.com/Gregory Neesmith. GregoryNeesmith.
Yep.
The other week, I couldn't spell my name.
I remember you took you like 3-4 tries. I thought it was an episode of Sesame Street.
Well, this week is a little better. I can actually spell my name. And we will be taking your comments and reading them on air throughout the show. Today's episode, WTF Part 2. As if last week wasn't enough.
Exactly.
There seemed to be more that had folks saying to themselves, WTF in what's going on in politics, culture, and personal life.
What the?
It's Sunday afternoon.
Fedazzles.
Yes. Don't make me have to get my hand close to the panic button.
7-second delay.
Yes. So today, we will cover a few topics.
Oh, hold on. Daryl says you forgot one of those uns at the top of the show.
What un did I forget?
Unpresidential.
Ooh. Daryl with the unpresidential, that's a good one.
He knew how to spell the Facebook Live link.
Shout out to the 215, Daryl from my hometown of Philly, representing as we do what we do here in the 212. And Daryl is correct, because part of the show today will include talking about Donald Trump.
Yep.
And him being unpresidential, and some might even say potentially even un-American, but we'll dive into that a little bit deeper. Also, there's some folks standing with Cap, a.k.a. Colin Kaepernick, and we'll talk about that. Also, there were some protests going on in Boston over the weekend.
There was a couple of, there were many sides, as Mr. Unpresidential would say.
Yes, and we will talk about all the many sides and both sides today for sure. And, of course, no show would be complete without jokes in the news.
Jokes in the news.
Which we'll need it, I'm sure, at some point, given all the unpresidential things and unprecedented things going on. Also, wordplay.
Wordplay.
Yes. And last but not least.
Probably the most, actually.
We will end the show with uninhibited.
Uninhibited.
Q&A. Yes. I will make sure to not save that much time for it.
Yep. As usual, I'll make sure there's plenty of time left.
Fair enough. So we're going to take a quick music break, get everything set up, and then we're going to dive into the unavoidable news stories of the week. More Underdog stuff after this quick, and I mean very quick, break. Welcome back to Underdog Stuff. Today's show, WTF Part 2. Whew. So it's been, you know, we talk politics, we talk culture, we talk personal life, and in a way they've kind of all converged into one this weekend, for me especially, and I wouldn't be shocked if I wasn't the only one feeling that way. Last night we got news that comedian and activist Dick Gregory passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about Dick Gregory and the impact he had on all of us. And also for me this weekend, I've been dealing with the passing away of someone close to me. And I wanted to just give a quick shout out to Pavel, who was a good friend of mine, who passed unexpectedly on Thursday night, and my thoughts and prayers are with him. And it's just emotional to deal with what's going on big picture with Charlottesville.
Yeah.
Closer to home in terms of culture and race, with someone like Dick Gregory passing away, and then even closer to home, the unexpected passing of one of my close friends, who I'll be with his family later in the week,
yeah,
to honor and celebrate him. But life can be, you know, here today and gone tomorrow. And I will say, with all the craziness going on, part of me is just like, of all the people that had to go, I'm sad that my close friend passed away, and also sad that someone who's fought for Underdogs his entire life, like a Dick Gregory, passed away too, all in the past 48 hours.
I mean, I think that this is just a difficult time for so many people going through so many things right now in the world. And it's sort of like, it takes you out of your bubble, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, again, my thoughts and prayers are with Pavel and his family, with Dick Gregory and his friends and family, and all of us who are touched by him, by being such a public figure. And with that, I do want to acknowledge Dick Gregory, who I know a lot of us know publicly, with just playing a quick clip of a tribute that was paid to Dick Gregory in the past 24 hours that I believe ran on CNN.
Yeah.
And here is that.
Early 60s comedy, and especially stand-up comedy, was a very segregated proposition. And Dick Gregory changed all of that single-handedly.
I see any baseball player having trouble. But that's a great sport for my people. That is the only sport in the world where a Negro can shake a stick at a white man and won't start no riot.
I realized that if I made people laugh, they would stop talking about me. So that's what I set out to do.
Dick Gregory was one of the first black comedians who really crossed over to the mainstream and did so in a way where he kept his integrity. There was not a sense that he became less culturally black or less committed to his own race because he played white rooms.
And you heard what Bobby Kennedy said about 8 weeks ago. He said, 30 years from this year, a Negro can become president. So treat me right, or I'll get in there and raise taxes on you. I mean, now don't get me wrong. I wouldn't mind paying my income tax if I knew it was going to a friendly country.
There's something about giving somebody a fact or a piece of information that may be a little confrontational, that people may be object to it. But if you can turn it into a punchline, they're much more open to it. And Gregory understood the power of comedy.
And that was just a quick tribute and some perspective on Dick Gregory.
Yeah, so Dick Gregory, we know that he was actually one of the first African-Americans to perform at white clubs. And unfortunately, he passed away yesterday at the age of 84. He was a big part, as you heard in that clip, of the civil rights movement. And a lot of people have actually paid tribute to him. today on and yesterday over Twitter. Jesse Jackson says he taught us how to laugh. He taught us how to fight. He taught us how to live. Dick Gregory was committed to justice. I miss him already. Mm. John Legend actually produced a play that focused on his life. And he actually said Dick Gregory lived an amazing revolutionary life, a groundbreaker in comedy, a voice for justice, he tweeted. And D.L. Hughley said, heaven just got funnier. So, I mean, it's so interesting watching and listening to some of his clips from the 60s and then looking at what's going on today in Charlottesville and West Virginia and sort of in with the sort of renewed sort of resurgence of these sort of movements. And we'd love to sort of, I know, Gregory, a lot of people probably know you. You're from the South yourself. And what's it like seeing all this stuff going on?
So, yeah, let's talk about a little bit about myself in the South, and then we'll bring it to Charlottesville. My parents are from South Carolina.
Yeah.
I grew up in Philly, but spent summers in the South with my parents. And I'll never forget the first time I had a conversation about race with my parents. My mom actually came home one day, and this is when I was a little kid, and she was frustrated at work. And she was like, you would think they would treat me better. I work twice as hard. I'm someone who brings value to their company. And she said this phrase to me, which at the time I was like, what are you talking about? She's like, I'm a twofer.
You're a twofer.
Yeah. And I'm like, Mom, that doesn't sound like very good English, but I digress. And what she said was that she was both considered a number that checked the box for both being Black and being a woman. And she would tell me about how she always felt like she had to work twice as hard to just keep her job. And that this whole idea of twofer was probably the first time I started to realize that there was something about us looking the way we look as a little kid that man, it means that stuff might be rough out there in the world. And she worked at a Fortune 100 company doing administrative related work and things like that. And she was surrounded by people who were engineers.
Mm-hmm.
And she said to me, son, you're going to be an engineer. And the reason why she wanted me to be an engineer is because she saw that of the Black people who were able to make it in the company where she worked, she was like, they were doing good. They had good jobs. They couldn't really be replaced. They had certain technical skills. And she just wanted to make sure that I would be able to get a job one day. And so she wanted me to be an engineer because she saw that they seemed to be of the Black people in the company, the ones that seemed to at least have it the best, even though they didn't have it that good. So fast forward to my teenage years, it was time to apply to college. I had dreams of being a radio host, which, as most of you know, I didn't start doing until about a few years ago. So I pushed that to the side. I had dreams of going into business, but my mom was worried that Black kid being in business, a degree in business administration, could you really get a job? I kind of need you to have some skills because it's rough out there. She remembers back to the engineers. They had a skill. You get a job, you'll be okay. So one of the schools I applied to as an engineer, a civil engineer actually, was the University of Virginia.
Oh, okay. You were almost a UVA student.
Yes. So it came down to being a business major at University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, or being a civil engineer, where I was accepted to UVA, and those were the two choices.
And you decided to...
I actually chose not to go to UVA because the engineering thing was just not for me, and I took the risk, or at least what my mom thought was the risk, of like going into this path of business. And so for me, for us to now come decades later and still be talking about race, Charlottesville, and being Black in America, it just made me think of like some of the things of the past that don't seem to be, they seem to still be very present today. And that gets us to,
you know,
the past week.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's really seeing, you know, what we talked last week, Sunday's show, you know, Charlottesville had really just happened, you know, and I think that now, after seeing sort of the aftermath and what sort of happened throughout the entire week, it's been interesting. We'd love to sort of, you know, hear your thoughts. We know from Monday, Trump basically said his many sides comment.
yes.
And then it feels like these things were a lifetime away, and it's literally just a week ago.
They do. So I, before we dive into today, I just want to give a little bit more context, because sometimes folks wonder, I always get this feeling that folks believe we've made so much progress, but we haven't. So I'm going to play a clip from 1968, and there's a gentleman talking about a politician. The politician's name is George Wallace. He was a Southern Democrat who was running for president in 1968 against Richard Nixon. And you'll hear the gentleman in this clip talking about how George Wallace could be a barometer for where we are in American politics, and especially what it means to African Americans for someone who might side with someone who's for segregation and for this whole idea of keeping what's right about segregation and racism in the South going. And what I would ask you to do as you listen to this clip, every time you hear the gentleman talking, say Wallace, substitute in the word Trump and see if it feels like it could be relevant in 2017, what was said in 1968. Because a lot of people are comparing what's happening now to potentially the civil rights movement of yesteryear, which wasn't that too long ago. So I want to play a clip to see if we can put it all in context. Every time you hear Wallace, see what it would feel like if you substituted in the name.
Influence. I don't think he's going to be that big an influence when it comes to election day. I feel, you know, Americans playing games with themselves, but when people go into the election box, I think it's going to be a lot different. I think it's good for what he's doing, because for the first time he's given a lot of people in America a means of expressing themselves that's never had that means before, other than throwing a brick and burning the cross. I feel it's very healthy for black folks, because black folks can't play games with themselves anymore. They got to come out to that Baptist church and realize that it is a lot of racism that exists in this country. Now, I don't feel that everybody that votes for Wallace is a vote against black folks, but 99.9% of the black folks feel that way. And so for the first time, we got a stick to measure America with that we never had before. And I would say that if Wallace's strength keeps up, there's going to be a lot of people embarrassed in this country. There's going to be a lot of jobs that opens up for black folks, that, you know, white folks who have always been decent are going out of their way now to help out in the black community because Wallace is embarrassing them as white folks. I think that in the worldwide opinion poll, Wallace is embarrassing America, and it might tend to help our behavior on a worldwide level to try to get the prestige back that this type of political action is going to cost America.
Well, I wonder how that felt to substitute in the name Trump with the gentleman who was just speaking about George Wallace back then in the 60s. The reason why I also wanted to play that clip is because the gentleman speaking was the man that we just talked about who recently passed away, and that was Dick Gregory. And unfortunately, I'm sure for a lot of you who just heard that, it felt like Dick Gregory could have been talking about 2017 and Donald Trump.
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, I think if you really listen to what he's saying, and I think this is what even I've heard Chappelle say in certain interviews as well, where it's sort of like, is there any silver lining that can come out of what we're seeing right now and what we're sort of this sort of elevated sort of movement on the right? And I think the one sort of silver lining is that it's sort of exposing something, and it's making people come together in sort of a more of a collective way. So something that, you know, was born out of the civil rights movement in the 60s were, you know, the Civil Rights Act and a lot of the, you know, affirmative action and a lot of sort of things that were sort of put in place at a federal level to help people of color. And obviously, it doesn't seem like there's been as much progress as they would have hoped at this point. And now we've sort of come to this culmination where we have, again, sort of an uprising of that other side. And is there a way to sort of flip that into a positive and sort of make more non-people of color sort of stand up for people who don't necessarily look like them?
Yeah, and speaking of uprising, we'll talk a little bit about that because there was an uprising in Boston, which was a very positive thing. Just a quick recap as we talk about the week in review. On Monday, Trump seemed to be taking us into a better direction coming out of Charlottesville.
Mm-hmm.
He was reading from the teleprompter, denouncing white supremacists, white nationalists, the KKK, saying they were repugnant. And it seemed like we were going to at least get some decency from him. Then Tuesday came. And if there was ever a moment where WTF felt very, very appropriate, it was on Tuesday when Donald Trump came out and went off script, or some would say actually started to speak from his heart. And with that, he can do himself his own injustice by, let's play Donald Trump off teleprompter on Tuesday speaking from the heart about what went on in Charlottesville.
Group on one side that was bad, and you had a group on the other side that was also very violent. And nobody wants to say that, but I'll say it right now. I think there's blame on both sides, and I have no doubt about it, and you don't have any doubt about it either. I've condemned neo-Nazis. I've condemned many different groups, but not all of those people were neo-Nazis, believe me. Not all of those people were white supremacists by any stretch. Those people were also there because they wanted to protest the taking down of a statue, Robert E. Lee.
And that was Trump. Both sides.
You, I don't have any doubt about it, and you don't have any doubt about it either, okay? What he's saying is ridiculous.
I got plenty of doubt, actually. But he wasn't done. He had more.
Oh, wow.
The slippery slope. Trump's worried. Let's.
Hey, this week it's Robert E. Lee. I noticed that Stonewall Jackson's coming down. I wonder, is it George Washington next week? And is it Thomas Jefferson the week after? You know, you really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop? Was George Washington a slave owner? So will George Washington now lose his status? Are we going to take down statues to George Washington? How about Thomas Jefferson? What do you think of Thomas Jefferson? You like him? Okay, good. Are we going to take down the statue? Because he was a major slave owner.
Where's it going to stop?
Where's it going to stop? Are we going to carve out Mount Rushmore? What are we going to do?
I actually think the question should be, where are we going to start?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Forget about where are we going to stop?
Exactly.
We haven't started.
I
take that back. Some cities have started.
I mean, yeah. I mean, like, look what's going on in Baltimore. I mean, they do have a black mayor, though. That's why we have to run for politics.
Yes, they do have a. I mean, we had a black president too, and
there's still. Wow, there's only so much. He had bigger fish to fry. I mean,
so part of me was like, it's easy for me to say Trump's crazy. It rolls off my tongue, and there's a lot of people go, yeah, he's crazy. And then I got a hold of some of the polls recently from this past week.
What are those polls saying?
Hold on. Don't Trump me, because Trump always says he doesn't believe the polls when they're not in his favor. So you got, I mean.
Let's see. What are the polls? Because who could possibly?
So I'm like, oh, Trump's crazy. He's crazy. Then I see a couple polls. First poll, CBS, not necessarily known as like a right-wing conspiracy organization. CBS Well, a lot of people watch their news, their whatever programming they have on. CBS said that 67% of Republicans approve of Trump's response to what's going on in Charlottesville. I thought I was like, oh, he's crazy. And it turns out that 67% of Republicans are like, Trump, go, man. Keep talking about both sides.
This kind of goes back to what Dick Gregory was saying about, I'm not saying that everyone who voted for Wallace / Trump is a racist. I'm just saying all the racists voted for Wallace or Donald Trump. And so it's not surprising that they could still find people that are excited in corroborating the spirit of what happened. If we've learned nothing else, folks, nothing's really changed. We can't be surprised that there are racist white people doing racist things, because it's always been that way. We should really be surprised when white people are not doing. I am actually genuinely surprised when white people are not racist, because it's been such a part of this history, culture, and heritage of this country. Like, we can't be surprised.
Well, we'll talk about in Boston where a number of folks, white and of different backgrounds, did show up to show some opposition. But the polls are not done shocking me. 69% of likely voters oppose erasing historical symbols of the past that are out of line with today's current sentiment. That's right. I said 69. That's 7 out of 10 folks who voted or likely to vote again are like, nah, bro, keep all of them up.
I mean, okay. Yeah. I definitely disagree with that. I'm definitely surprised that there's that many people.
7
that...
out of 10 likely voters.
Yeah. But that's just because, you know.
I think you have to differentiate between whether something is historical or what something is celebratory. And I think you go to museums to see history. And I think you start building monuments and statues to things. It seems like it's a celebration. You're putting it on a pedestal, literally, to be held up in front of society. So what are we holding up in front of society, as opposed to what are we being honest as a part of the story of America?
Well, I think. That leads me to just some additional thoughts, which would be, I agree that celebrating someone is different than remembering them. And there's things called books, there's Wikipedia, there's Google, there's museums, there's countless opportunities for folks to remember their history. I just want to use as an example, which may seem a bit extreme, but I think it's very fair, which is there were a lot of people I saw online going, where did this uproar start? People weren't trying to tear down Confederate stuff when Obama was in office. And I'm like, that's just silliness. Was South Carolina part of the Confederacy?
Yes.
Was it?
Absolutely.
How can you remember that? Because they took down the Confederate flag of South Carolina. Nikki Haley, who's a Republican, did that a couple years ago. So by taking that down, you've now erased that South Carolina was part of the Confederacy, right? Because you erase the history by taking down the flag.
Listen, no. You're not going to get me on that team. I say erase
exactly,
a flag, a monument, statue, all celebratory.
But that's my point. I think we just recently have done this before Trump got into office. We started to undo some of our wrongs. And no one has forgotten South Carolina's history because they took the flag down. But it was a step in the right direction to say that they no longer at least are going to publicly endorse what it stood for as part of the honoring of the state of South Carolina.
But what you've seen in the wake of that is it's still very much a part of the heritage of that state. And now people who are part of who find that heritage endearing are pushing back and saying, hey, don't change things. You know, I think there's this idea that I know for a fact there's this idea that immigrants and black people are stealing jobs and opportunity from these people who are holding on so dearly to these statues of the Confederacy. The problem is they don't realize that it's Trump and the wealthy 1% that are stealing their opportunities. And so hopefully this opportunity, hopefully they will breathe themselves out or bump their head and finally recognize that they're being treated like poor people in America, the same as black people and Hispanic people. They're just being pitted against those people, so they don't think it's going to treadmill of being mad. Just stay mad, stay unproductive, stay doing nothing, stay making no money, stay paying your taxes, stay taking welfare. Just stay on the treadmill.
Divide and conquer has definitely been used before. Just one quick closing thought before we take a quick break, and then we're going to talk about the protest.
Well, I wanted to, there's an interesting debate going on our Facebook Live comments right now, and I wanted to kind of maybe, it's related to this topic, and maybe we could just sort of address some of these. There's two opposing sides here. We've got Joe, who says he keeps hearing us say that we haven't made any significant progress since the 60s. Do we really believe that? At what point can we say that progress has been made? We are living in a pretty good time, and people are over here outraged over statues.
So there's two things that are in his statement. Let me address the first one, which is, yes, we've made progress. It's the 1400s, you know, terrible. Things got better, and things continue to get better, but we haven't gotten to where we are living in the spirit of all men are created equal, creating a more perfect union. And so, yes, Joe, I will agree. Progress has been made, and yet there is still plenty of work to be done. Then lastly, he made a point about the statues. You know, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. If given a forced choice of would I prefer equal opportunity, jobs, less racism over like whether the statue stays or goes, well, I mean, I think it's pretty clear which one I would choose. But I'm also not one who believes that these things are like one or the other. The symbols were put up for a reason, right? It's almost like when people say, oh, commercials don't matter. If they didn't matter, we wouldn't run them. Those statues were put up. Let's go to Charlottesville. When was that statue put up? It's ironic, actually. It was commissioned in 1917, 100 years ago, to honor a side of the U.S. that wanted to succeed and break up the country and also fight for something that people say, forget about the politics of it, it's just morally wrong, which was slavery. My thought is that we didn't get it right the first time putting them up. And I'm saying to us, this is an opportunity for us to not get it wrong again by leaving them up. Because symbolism matters. There's a reason why people want names in rafters. They want paintings up on their walls. They want statues in their parks because they mean something. They celebrate. And where do we draw the line? Donald Trump was like, well, are we going after George Washington next? Are we going after Thomas Jefferson? Stay focused. We're going after folks who represent treason to the country and slavery, which was one of the worst acts that we were founded on. That's what we're talking about right now.
Exactly.
Though that would also include George Washington.
Yeah, but
and Ben Franklin, to be clear.
Yes, but
he raises a valid point, but my whole thing is like, well, eventually them. Not today.
You're going to worry about the Confederate flag at this moment.
Yeah, let's just worry about people who are attached to the Confederate flag. Like you said, I think you have a great benchmark. It needs to involve treason and slavery. Meaning, hey, if you did not push back when we decided to change slavery, you know, some things are just a sign of the times. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, and it also reminds me of one of my favorite quotes from Muhammad Ali. And later today, we'll talk about another athlete who has made a stance about injustice, Colin Kaepernick. Muhammad Ali has a saying that says, any man who still thinks the same way at 50 that they did at 20 has wasted 30 years.
I agree.
And I would argue that this country, if we're still thinking the same way now that we thought in 1917, then we have wasted 100 years.
Well put.
And so with that, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back with more of the unavoidable news stories of the week, your online comments, and you can join the conversation at area code 212-650-6903. More underdog stuff and today's episode, WTF, after this break. Welcome back to Underdog Stuff, live radio show and podcast that we do here every week on WHCR 90.3 FM, the voice of Harlem. Joined in the building by the Underdog Stuff team, Asha Davis.
Hi.
Kirsten Magwood. Hello. M. Dot, a.k.a. Marlon. Everybody in the building. And, of course, there's underdogs in the building who've been commenting on Facebook Live, which you can watch at facebook.com/GregoryNeesmith. Or you can listen to us while you're driving around in the streets of New York City on 90.3 FM or online at WHCR.org. today's show, WTF. And we were just talking about what was going on in Charlottesville. And now we fast forward to another weekend and some more protests.
Some more protests. But Boston, there was actually a free speech, quote unquote, free speech protest that was organized. And while they did say that they were not, you know, completely affiliated with sort of alt-left groups, neo-Nazis, some of the speakers were and were very questionable. And so there were counter protests organized in Chicago that vastly, 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 vastly outnumbered the actual sort of quote unquote free speech protests. And it was relatively violence free.
Yes. And just the craftiness and mischievousness of sometimes some of these white nationalist type groups to call it a free speech rally. I mean, because what you're going to hear in the news is like, people counter protest show up to fight free speech organization. It's like, damn, they be crafty sometimes.
Exactly. But, like, to now to be able to classify, you know, white supremacy, neo-Nazism as quote unquote free speech.
Yeah, that 40,000 people showed up against free speech.
Right.
No, they showed up against white nationalists. And to your point, it was for every one person who was there as a white nationalist, there were 4,000.
Yes.
Counter protesters. And so in total, about 40,000 people showed up to be heard that it is unacceptable to have a point of view of white nationalism, white supremacy, or the KKK.
Exactly.
And to your point, relatively violence free. I think there were less than 30 something arrests. Most of them were for disorderly conduct, which would be less than 0.5% of all the people who were there yesterday. And so well done by folks showing up and fighting for true American values and letting those white nationalists know that, hey, we're not having it.
They were actually out there chanting, hey, hey, ho, ho, white supremacy has got to go. I can get behind that.
Can you? Yeah.
Can we do it one more time?
No.
But that's what they were chanting.
No, but there's a word in there where I'm just like, I don't, but I get it.
It was like Santa's ho-hos.
Oh, boy.
It was Santa's ho. It was Santa's ho. That's
not like the.
It wasn't the garden tool. It was like hi ho, hi ho. It's off to work. Okay.
I think it's also fair to address this bigger question of, you know, freedom of speech is something that we all, I think, applaud and stand up for. And so, why isn't it okay for Nazis to go out and say their piece and how they feel? And I think that's a problem that hasn't properly been addressed. The simple fact is there's just a history and a legacy of white supremacy and Nazi speech inciting violence against groups. Because this is not just speech, but it's speech that is hate speech, that speech that sort of like you don't want to have the Taliban come speak on American soil. You wouldn't allow that. You can't allow terrorism. You can't allow people who use words to inflict terror and incite violence on other people that kind of space. And so I think that has to be super clarified.
Yeah. And I think what's been troublesome is that do these groups have the right to free speech? They do. But what they don't get to have is it becoming acceptable, normalized, given cover by comments from the president of the United States. Like, that is a place where it then becomes incumbent upon everyone else to make sure these folks know that their ideas aren't welcome and they're not a part of who we are. And unfortunately, in the past week, you kind of start to get the feeling that, oh, yeah, maybe it is a little bit kind of the way we are as a country.
It's totally the way we are.
And so that's what's been troublesome, not the free speech, but the actual normalizing of their behavior and where they stand and walking out in khakis and just chilling face out. Just, hey,
khakis
it's all
good. Torches.
Mask off.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and torches. So that, like, we can't, that's a place where we can never get to be acceptable.
Exactly.
Well, you know, I think that we learned something big the day that the Underdog Stuff show launched. And it's almost very powerful that the show launched on the day of the election. It's like we learned the election, that everything we thought we knew, the America we thought we were, we're really not. So this is, to me, a process of unlearning and humbling ourselves to the reality. You know, unfortunately, not only is this the president we deserve, this is the president we voted in as a country, not personally in this room. But you know what I'm saying?
Yes. 60 million or so of them.
Correct.
Yes. Well, that's a little bit about the week it was related to Charlottesville, and then fast forward to Boston. So shout out again to all the folks who were fighting for our country.
Yes, and Trump tweeted, "I want to applaud the many protesters in Boston who are speaking out against bigotry and hate. Our country will soon come together as one."
All gaslighting.
"Our great country has been divided for decades. Sometimes you need to protest in order to heal, and we will heal and be stronger than ever before."
So one thing before we move on, because this to me is, I hate to use him as a coaching moment, but it is a pretty good moment here. There, folks listening, I've been here sometimes where, let's say I haven't been the greatest in a relationship. It could be a friendship, partnership, someone you work with. And then let's say you wake up one morning, you're like, I'm going to do better. With that relationship that you've been messing up in, whatever the relationship, platonic, romantic, and you're like, you know what, you wake up one morning, like, I'm going to do better. And then that day you run into that person or people, that team, you're like, guys, let's all be one and love each other, and like, it's all going to work itself out. Just because you wake up one morning and you want to make things better and say something that could sound like perfectly said, that other person isn't going to all of a sudden be like, all right, then. It takes time to undo our behaviors and things that we said. This is the same dude who said an American judge of Mexican descent couldn't judge his case at Trump University because his parents were Mexican.
Exactly.
Who Paul Ryan, who is a Republican, said, I don't know if Trump's racist, but guess what? That's the textbook definition of a racist statement.
Exactly.
And so excuse me or forgive me for that every time that Trump one morning wakes up and wants to tweet something or read off a teleprompter about how it's going to be different and he's going to be different and we can all come together, it's not enough. And so for any of you guys out there, or women or men out there, who if something's been going off the rails, just because you like have a good week doesn't mean everything's going to be all right. It's going to take some time, effort, and backed up actions for it to be the case. And oh, by the way, as soon as Trump tweets that stuff during the week, an African-American male leaves one of his business councils and he goes and attacks him.
Exactly.
Online. But then when all the other folks leave the business council, who happen to be non-black CEOs, I didn't see any tweets. Next thing I know, he's disbanding the council because things seem to be a little out of hand. Shout out to Ken Frazier, CEO of Merck, for being the first to walk away from Trump's business council because he wasn't aligned with how Trump handled Charlottesville, and then he led the way for others to then follow suit. Shout out to Ken Frazier of Merck.
Shout out to Ken Frazier. Shout out to Ken Frazier. And I think, you know, it brings up a really good point. You know, we've got a couple of Facebook Live comments I'd love to sort of get to. And so it's interesting because Daryl says there's no such thing as the alt-left. That's made up BS, just as there's no such thing as the alt-right. Those are white nationalists and Nazis, plain and simple. And, you know, and Joe says the KKK hasn't been relevant in 50 years. The far right is a fringe movement and represents a minuscule percentage of the population, but the media gives them way too much attention. And I think it's really interesting because, you know, you think about this conversation sort of being now front and center, and how some of these, whether or not somebody classifies themselves as being in the KKK, these racist statements, these racist thoughts are still racist. You know, just because you don't call yourself a Nazi, that doesn't mean that you're not capable of saying, doing, and acting in a racist way.
Yeah. And to that point, I agree with Daryl. I think that cute names lessen the blow of what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from this point forward, I actually somewhat agree with not even using the term alt-right. And say that there were white nationalists,
yes,
white supremacists, and KKK members at a rally.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something powerful about actually saying that.
Yes.
As opposed to, in last week in Charlottesville, a gentleman on the alt-right ran into a crowd of protesters and someone was killed. No, someone who's reported to be a white supremacist or a believer of the KKK's philosophy murdered a woman who was protesting along with injured them in an act of domestic terrorism. Like, that's what happened, as opposed to someone from the alt-right was protesting and murdered someone.
You're right, because words matter, because saying alt-right, then it makes it seem like there's an alt-left on the other side, and it's, you know.
And it legitimizes things like we just start throwing around terms like, oh, Steve Bannon, who we'll talk about later, works for an alt-right publication. Like, exactly. It's normal to have alt-right beliefs.
Exactly.
I would take it a step further to even say I'm not particularly comfortable with white nationalists, because that sounds a little fuzzy and friendly. It's not like you want... White nationalists seems to me a little benign. Like, I think of black nationalists, I don't think of them as being a violent and inflamed group of people.
Yeah, I use it only because it's a term that historically we also defines an ideology about preserving the white race, about having a certain stance on immigration and things like that, that also to me can have racist overtones, but also they're just anti-American. And so I like to say all three of the groups, but I hear where you're coming from. Yeah. But white nationalists, white supremacists, and KKK, in a way, are three separate ideologies that all are sometimes interrelated, but all to me are all un-American and should be fought against. And that's why I call all three out.
And we've more importantly got to start identifying these acts as terrorism in the same way that we have an ongoing conversation about Islam and Muslims and terrorism, even though the majority of Muslims are not participating in terrorist activities, even, and it's the fastest growing religion. We still need to make that same clarity with this domestic terrorism, that it is terrorism. Terrorism, terrorism, terrorism is the word that needs to continue to come out, because it has people living in fear, and there's a violent aspect to it. People are dying and living in fear and traumatized.
Yes.
For centuries because of this movement.
And there you have it, some worthwhile recap of what happened this week, but also I think helpful to have the conversation. And I appreciate actually both Daryl and Joe joining the conversation today, because it allows for us to go like another level deeper in terms of what the opposing sides are.
Exactly. And I think, you know, now let's talk about people that are sort of standing for something, people that are sort of fighting for what at least I'm going to say is the right side. And that's Colin Kaepernick.
Well, I mean, someone standing for better policing practices and wanting to stop police brutality and inequalities in the criminal justice system, I will bet everything on that. That is always on the right side of things.
Yeah.
So with that, who's standing with Colin Kaepernick this week? It seems like the momentum is growing for support for Colin Kaepernick. And I think by now most folks know who he is. He is a former quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers who has been taking a stand for policing, police brutality, inequality in the criminal justice system, and as a result is not employed as a quarterback, even though he is an above average and well-qualified quarterback for the NFL. He still can't seem to get a job, and I think I know why, and it's because of the stance he took. But with that, there are people now starting to come out and show their support for him. And this weekend, to me, potentially one of the most powerful groups to show support for him was police officers.
Exactly, the NYPD. So Sergeant Edwin Raymond organized a gathering of about 100 officers at Brooklyn Bridge Park this weekend, and they all were wearing T-shirts that said hashtag I'm with Cap. Very, very powerful. And Sergeant Raymond is actually no stranger to the cause. In 2015, actually, Sergeant Raymond filed a class action lawsuit against the police department for policing practices they say discriminated against minority communities.
Yes, and we have a clip of him, right?
Yeah.
Let's play that clip.
It's the way he's being railroaded for speaking the obvious truth. This is not what America was founded on. Some may argue that what he's doing is more American, because this country was actually founded on challenging injustice. As members of law enforcement, we can confirm that the issues that he is saying exist in policing and throughout the criminal justice system.
All of the people behind me risk their lives, so to speak, to protect folks. And they are standing with Kaepernick because they understand how important it is to push back on the structure.
Buddy, I'm Kaylee McEnany. Thank you for joining us.
Welcome back. That was...
Sergeant Edwin Raymond of the NYPD. And essentially, he's talking about Colin Kaepernick and basically showing his support. Essentially, he said, you know, the Kaepernick is being railroaded by the NFL for speaking the obvious truth. And really, that's not what America was founded on.
Yeah, I applaud, actually, police officers. There's that saying of who's going to police the police.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, to me, a big deal to have New York police officers come out and show their support for Colin Kaepernick. But there were more folks showing support for Colin Kaepernick. And they include players.
Mm-hmm.
NFL players actually starting to say that they're with Cap. And as we start the new season, currently in the preseason, where now games are starting to be played, there's been actual NFL players starting to show their solidarity with the cause and with Colin by not standing during the national anthem or taking some type of gesture, let's say a fist in the air or something like that. So, ever heard of Michael Bennett?
Yes. The Seattle Seahawks, right?
It's okay if you don't. He's not. So, for folks out there, Asha is fully in the know about a lot of things. He's not actually that famous of a football player where this is some indictment on Asha. Like, how can you not know Michael Bennett? There's actually a lot of people who follow football who probably don't even necessarily know for sure who Michael Bennett is. But he plays defense and is a member of the Seattle Seahawks, who are known to be a very outspoken.
He's on the same team as Sierra's husband, right?
That's how you're gonna.
Yeah. All right, I get that. I know Michael Bennett.
That's how you're gonna make the connection. now I know how people must feel when someone goes like, "That's such and such wife." Like you just literally made Russell Wilson almost only exist through Sierra.
Welcome to being a woman.
You're like, yeah, the dude who married Sierra
exactly
plays on the team with the dude who's supporting Colin.
Think about how many women are classified as such and such as wife.
It's right. It's wrong.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, Sierra and husband Russell Wilson, the starting quarterback in Super Bowl.
Sierra's
MVP.
Husband is on a football team that this guy plays on. Keep going.
We're coming up on a station in the top of the hour. And then when we come back, that'll give folks time to Google Michael Bennett and Sierra and Russell Wilson, and they'll also learn about Future when they do the Google search, right?
Maybe
and
not.
Sherman, so don't confuse Sherman with Future, because Sherman has locks, but he plays with football. He's not baby daddy.
We don't all look alike. But so during this quick break, you can Google Sierra, Future, Michael Bennett, and Russell Wilson, and Colin Kaepernick.
Yes.
And then we'll come back and talk more about NFL players supporting Colin and today's episode WTF more after this quick break. Welcome back to Underdog Stuff, live radio show and podcast that we do here every week on WHCR 90.3 FM, the voice of Harlem. Today's episode, WTF Part 2.
Part duh.
And unfortunately, in politics, culture, and personal life, there's been a lot of things having us all probably say WTF this week.
Mm-hmm.
And we've touched on a few of those. And right now, touching on a gentleman who's been fighting to make things better.
Yes.
And Colin Kaepernick. We talked about the NYPD having members of the police force stand with Kaepernick this weekend. And then there's been players. So we were talking about Michael Bennett.
Yes. And I've now Googled who he is. I'm very familiar with him. Daryl says my football skills need to be stepped up.
It's all good. Although I will say I have not watched any football yet this preseason, and I'm likely to not watch any football until Colin Kaepernick is signed.
Oh, wow. So you're part of the boycott.
Yes. And I think most folks know by now who listen is that for me, it's about, I don't like the precedent to be set that when someone punches their wife in the face or assaults another person, or there's domestic violence, or there's drug things that happen, or you do something related to a dog ring, that we forgive and we move on and we sign those players again for a second chance or third chance or fourth chance. But then when someone does something that is legal,
that is positive,
that is on the right side of history 100%, that they, Colin Kaepernick, is having trouble getting a job.
Yes. And I think that is such an important point, Gregory, because, you know, the counter argument, and we actually have a comment on Facebook that says, you know, somebody posing a counter argument. They say that Colin chose to make a political statement while working for a private company. Regardless of whether you feel he's right or wrong, the statement created turmoil and negative attention. As a business decision, he's not worth the trouble. And so, you know, but given sort of what you said before, I think that that's so interesting because we've seen this happen before.
I am so grateful for that comment, actually, because it allows me to say my point one more time and say it actually in the spirit of what they just said.
Yeah.
Colin Kaepernick has the right to protest.
Yes.
The way he did as part of the San Francisco 49ers and not standing during the national anthem for what he stood for. The owners have the right to not employ Colin Kaepernick because they potentially disagree with his stance. They don't think they like what he did, or maybe they just are okay with the way the system is. And then I have the right to say there's moments in time where I don't want certain cultural norms or precedents set for what is accepted and accepted, especially when things are not illegal. It's not illegal for Colin to protest. It's not illegal for the owners not to hire him. But it is a new precedent or a cultural norm that is, to me, unacceptable in America when someone is trying to fight for something that's just, that they don't get a job. I'm not going to sign up for being silent and say like, oh, that's all right. So, yeah, everybody has their right. And then I don't agree with how things are unfolding right now. And I don't want that to be how things end.
I agree. And I mean, you think it's... I personally, I would love to speak with an employment lawyer because of that. Because in corporate America, you can't just lose your job because you're standing up for the rights of other people. You know, he didn't do anything. There's nowhere in your contract with the NFL that it says you must stand up for the national anthem or you're in violation of league rules.
No, but what they have on their side is that he wasn't fired. His contract ended.
Right.
And they're like, we can pick up whatever quarterbacks we want, and we've deemed that there's other options. And so, obviously, it'll never come out, well, at least in the moment. Maybe some day there'll be a leaked email or call or something. But as of right now, they're legally actually allowed to not sign him. But it's a precedent that I don't want set. Now, one other thing, Michael Bennett, who didn't stand during the national anthem, he had someone come over and give him support.
Mm-hmm.
Which was one of the white football players on the Seattle Seahawks actually came over, and I believe it was reported that he either put his arm around him, but he was there showing his solidarity with his teammate, and then also had a press conference afterwards and talked about that he mm-hmm. wanted to make sure he showed his support. And I think it's an important thing, and also what I'd love to see more of is that people supporting one another.
Yeah, it was a big shout out to Justin Britt. Who plays for the Seattle Seahawks, number 68, who, as you mentioned, is a non-teammate of color. He's a white person. And he, as we said, you know, it's important for people of all colors to stand up for equality for people of all colors.
Yes. And shout out to Malcolm Jenkins, who plays for the Philadelphia Eagles,
mm-hmm.
who I believe keeps his hand raised with fist in the air during the anthem.
Mm-hmm.
And while he did that, his teammate, first name escapes me, but last name Long, who's a son of Howie Long, who was a very famous football player and also a white male teammate of Malcolm Jenkins, put his arm around Malcolm during the national anthem while Malcolm had his fist up in the air. And again, showing his support for mm-hmm. Malcolm Jenkins and the call.
It was actually Chris Long.
Yes, Chris Long.
Mm-hmm.
Not Howie Long, but Chris Long, who is Howie Long's son.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who Howie Long is?
I definitely know who Howie Long is. He's a...
definitely.
No, because he's like a commentator.
True, with Strahan and Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah, and it, like, you know, I used to play Madden when I was younger, back in those days. He was like one of the original like football characters like in the game, like one of the famous people.
On that note, shout out to Chris Long,
yes,
Malcolm Jenkins,
yes,
Michael Bennett,
mm-hmm.
and the name Pitt. What was his name? One more time.
Justin Britt.
Justin Britt. Shout out to them, the NYPD, and all the folks standing with Colin Kaepernick. And speaking of standing with Colin Kaepernick, one last thing related to this story. There's going to be a protest, a rally in New York City outside the NFL offices on August 23rd to actually, again, show support for Colin taking his stance. And also, I believe the protesters will be out there because they also want Colin to get signed and get a job.
Who's organizing it?
It's hosted by Spike Lee.
I know Spike Lee's name has been reported to be a part of.
No, I verified. He's the host.
Okay, so he's the host. So Spike Lee.
Send it off. Doing the right thing. Wake up, everybody. Wake up.
Yes,
he's on
theme.
He's on brand.
Okay. He definitely is about doing the right thing. So that's good stuff. So for anyone who's in the New York City area, hopefully folks will turn out in a way that folks turned out in Boston, actually, which was in big numbers, peacefully, and then also making their voices heard. So good stuff. Shout out to Spike Lee. And the folks will be out there supporting Colin Kaepernick. So with that, we're going to take a quick break and then more underdog stuff. Today's episode, WTF Part 2. You can join the conversation at area code 212-650-6903. Or you can comment on Facebook at facebook.com/Gregory Neesmith. The Facebook Live is popping.
Next up, you know, it's about to get even more popping. You know what we're talking about next, right?
What are we talking about next?
Bannon.
Control Alt Delete.
Banning the cannon.
After this. Welcome back to Underdog Stuff, live radio show and podcast. Today's episode, WTF Part 2. So much going on in politics, culture, and our personal lives that have us saying WTF.
WTF.
But this one, our next story, doesn't have me say WTF at all, actually. But that's just me.
I think it's like the positive WTF. WTF?
Oh, that's... It's sometimes not what you say, but
yeah,
how you say it.
Yeah, how you say it.
That's like a, oh, that's good WTF.
That's, let's go, finally.
So.
WTF took it so long.
Yes. So. I like to call this story Control Alt Right Delete because Steve Bannon, the senior strategist for Donald Trump or former strategist for Donald Trump, resigned.
Did he resign or was he fired? How'd that work?
Remember how you go, or was he fired?
Or was he fired?
That's what I was hoping for.
Oh. Wait, try that one more.
So we like to call this story Control Alt Right Delete. Steve Bannon, senior chief strategist in the Trump administration, resigned a few days ago.
Resigned?
You don't think he resigned?
Or was he fired?
Much better.
Okay. that's
see how that works?
That's how
it works. I thought we do this. Howie Long's a Hall of Famer, too.
I did know that. Thanks, Facebook Live comments.
So it was Friday again, and guess what happened? Someone resigned or was
fired.
Steve Bannon, gone. Supposedly, he and the new chief of staff, John Kelly.
General John Kelly, who's keeping folks in line over there.
Yes, he's also the chief of staff.
I know. He's also a general, which is why he was brought in.
Yeah, and he's truly keeping things in order around there, like on Tuesday press conference.
Exactly.
Like, actually, as a sidebar, they showed the video of like some of Trump's staff who was in the background while he was giving his impromptu press conference, where he was supposed to be talking about infrastructure, and talked about infrastructure for about 4 seconds, and then went into his just downfall of a thing about Charlottesville. They showed John Kelly in the back, like hands folded, head down, like, WTF.
Slumped.
Yeah. So he may be the chief, but not of the chief, just of the staff.
Mm-hmm.
And so supposedly him and Steve Bannon, back on August 8th, actually, is when Steve supposedly resigned. And then they made it official his last day on Friday.
Yes. They said Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
The press secretary, yes.
She said, Chief of Staff John Kelly and Steve Bannon have mutually agreed today would be Steve's last day. That today was Friday. We are grateful for his service and wish him the best. And one White House source says his departure may seem turbulent in the media, but inside it'll be very smooth. He has no projects or responsibilities to hand off. So he wasn't, was he really doing much?
That sounds like a hater.
That sounds
whoever that was, like, I can see why they were off the record. That sounds like a lot of hate. I'm almost certain that he was doing something while there and probably some stuff working against sometimes the greater good, because he is reported to be someone who is a sympathizer and potentially one of the voices of white nationalist movement, as we know, which sometimes has some relationships to the KKK and to white supremacy groups. So to say that Steve Bannon wasn't doing anything, things like build a wall.
Exactly.
I mean, the travel ban. Some of those things seem very, not just Trump-esque, but Bannon-esque.
Well, even more recently with the, you know, many sides, many sides, many people are saying that that dilution and lack of ability to fundamentally sort of fundamentally sort of discourage those types of groups is because of Steve Bannon's association with them.
Very true. Now, what did Donald Trump say about his departure?
Donald Trump's...
I believe he said he tweeted about Donald Trump.
I want to thank Steve Bannon for his service. He came to the campaign during my run against crooked Hillary Clinton. It was great. Thanks, S.
Yo, can I just say, I wish Twitter existed when I was having to say hellos and goodbyes to people.
Oh,
140 characters. It's real easy to put together a message when you have only 140 characters.
Exactly.
Now, what does all this mean? Some say maybe it happened because of what unfolded in Charlottesville, that maybe Trump wanted to distance himself from someone like Steve Bannon, who's seen as being part of the white nationalist movement. But if you resign on August 8th, then I don't think that's the case, because that happened before Charlottesville went down. Now, I will say, you ever heard that phrase, keep your friends close and your enemies even closer?
Yes.
I actually am not quite sure this is going to be a good thing for the country or for Donald Trump.
Why?
Because when you're an employee, regardless of what organization it is, in this case, Bannon was an employee of supposedly the people, us, but definitely of the Trump administration, you kind of have some boundaries that you have to adhere to. You can't be popping off at the mouth, saying what you want to say. You can't go have articles posted, and like, you're kind of under control. This dude is probably going to go ham now that he no longer has to worry about the confines of the White House.
Yes, and I'm extremely terrified, because he's already back at Breitbart. He was, you know, fired or resigned, whatever that was, 2 days ago, and hours later he was back in his job at Breitbart. And Trump actually signaled his approval of that career shift and said, Steve Bannon will be a tough and smart new voice at Breitbart News, maybe even better than before. fake news needs the competition. So I am extremely terrified about this because, you know, as you say, this could be sort of a window into sort of what Bannon outside of the White House would look like. Their sort of views are emboldened by sort of the hype that's been generated around around them as being so getting so much focus from being associated with the president.
I think it's going to be fantastic, actually. I think that I'm enjoying this house of cards falling down. I think that just like this has turned into The Apprentice, the political version, at some point they're going to get snitches. I mean, people are going to start talking. Everyone fired. He did not hire a bunch of political operatives. He did not hire a bunch of guys that are in the system. These guys, even if there are rules, haven't been playing by the rules and don't know the rules. So I think that someone's going to be singing. It might be Bannon. I think Bannon will come out, particularly now that, you know, Trump is not coalescing and doing what he'd planned. I think it'll be very interesting to see how these people fall out. I can't wait for him to go for Sessions because I feel like Sessions is the type that's going to sing. I just think that the more people that get voted off the island, the more room we have for snitches. And, well, I'm excited. I'm excited about everyone who gets voted off.
Bannon is the one I'm terrified of.
Bye-bye, Bannon. What do you think he's going to do?
Start a TV network and with, like, Unfiltered and just have so much more support because now he's so much more famous than he was before.
Yeah, and I think
that's what terrifies me about him specifically.
But my thing is, like, again, this voice, this energy, this movement is real, and I prefer being able to see it and target it properly than it hiding in the bushes and, you know, parking lots of America. I'm glad they're all out on the table so we can take them all out.
We will get to see him because Breitbart just got a little bit more notoriety, and they just got their man back, and he's known for saying he can't wait to go to war. And I'm sure he will. And it'll be interesting to see if he ever turns on Donald Trump now that he is free of him. And we had a caller who just called in during the conversation and wanted to acknowledge that Steve Bannon was in the military and he did some things in the private sector. And I'm like, those things are all true. And as of right now, I'm one of those folks who don't get too caught up in the past. To use an example, people often talk about John McCain as a war hero.
So long ago.
And I'm like, great. Honored. And like, I appreciate John McCain and any person who served at the mercy and the direction of the commander in chief at that time to do something, hopefully, for the right for this country. But just because his past was a war hero doesn't mean he's a good politician.
Mm-hmm.
And so I appreciate the caller, first of all, for listening and sharing his point of view and wanting to acknowledge some of Bannon's history. But for me, what is most relevant to me is that his current status is one of someone who believes in the white nationalist movement. But yes, it is true. He was once part of the military and also very successful as a member of Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
Yes. With that, there's been a lot of stuff going on in the news. Is it time for jokes in the news? Kind of break things up before we shift in some things going on in culture and personal life?
Yeah. I wish we had some like news, like some news announcer music, you know, to kind of like. Exactly.
You are fine and so hard.
That exists. That's the hip hop version of the news. You know, little Jay-Z bars.
You got this?
Hip-hop news.
Yeah, does this mean you're going to spit the news, Asha? Are you going to rap the news today?
Oh, shoot.
That would be crazy,
That's a good
yo.
Idea, though. That's a good idea. I'm not going to freestyle the news. I didn't practice.
Okay, I didn't know if you wanted this in
That's
the background.
That's what freestyling is. Okay. You don't need practice.
It's up to you. Like, I can leave it. I can bring it down.
You don't need practice, son.
You're like,
you
turn
got
me up,
this.
Turn
you
me up
got
in the headphones.
This.
Turn
you
me up in the headphones.
When it you two, I'm trying to first you say, you know, you want me to do my segment not as setting up a hype of jokes, and then you know, then you guys set me
Just
up as a hype of
that.
Jokes.
I never said that.
Asha's that a very church, Asha's a very funny girl. What I want is I want her light to shine the brightest, and as funny as she is, she's also a dope MC, so I saw an opportunity here to let your light shine up on all of the people of WHCR audience.
Okay.
The full flavor.
Okay.
Not just like, not like, you know, watered down.
I'm corporate America now. I'm no longer a dope MC.
nice.
When it comes to denouncing the president's support for neo-Nazis chanting, Jews will not replace us, Jared and Ivanka seem to have choked. Perhaps we need to perform the Laheimlich maneuver.
That's clever. and it is, because I think what's cool about humor is when there's also a lot of truth in it. It is kind of crazy. His daughter is married to a Jewish man.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if folks have saw the documentary, but I recommend it. It's a 22-minute documentary by Vice that interviewed one of the white nationalists who was leading a speaker at the Unite the Right.
Yes, it was quite good.
And he said, like, he needs a president that's even more racist than Trump, because Trump is allowing his daughter to be with that Jewish man, Jared Kushner. So, good one. I see where you went with that one.
All right. Donald Trump recently tweeted that the country is divided and sometimes you need to protest to heal. And obviously he made a typo. He spelled it H-E-E-L. For once, I agree with him. The KKK's butt is definitely one place I want to put my heel in protest.
Love it.
Okay.
I got it. He did. He misspelled.
He fixed it later.
Okay. Oh, he deleted it. Okay. It was unprecedented.
Steve Bannon has been fired and is now making fake news at Breitbart. Next week's headline: despite claims from a 1992 alt-left racist propaganda movie, white men can jump.
Da-da-ts.
Like, jump to, like, a new thing?
Oh, God. That was funny. Just because you don't get it, that was funny.
We all know that he got fired. I mean, this whole, like, code word resigned. Like, who just up and resigns from their job in front of everybody while their pants are down? I just, you know, come on.
All right, so we'll go 2 out of 3.
I thought that white men can jump. It was more related to the movie, and, you know.
I'm just advocating that you bring your Cameron flavor to the news next week. I think it should be funny and have flow.
I'll see what I can do.
Because don't let the corporate swag fool you. Asha still gets down as an MC.
Yes, as Jackie.
And you're the voice that we need. We need a dope female MC. We need that, like, spirit of Chuck D. We need, like, the funny of, like, a Ludacris. Like, you could be that chick, yo. Right here on Underdog Stuff. Right. I'm here for the underdog on the rise. The corporate female MC.
She's going to bring you on Best of the Best. Though,
that's what you should be called. You should be called, MC CEO.
Okay.
On that note, we're gonna take.
She's gonna be the spliff star to my busta, yo.
And on that note, we're gonna take a quick break and more underdog stuff. And I don't know if there'll be any rapping, but there'll be some more talking after this break. Welcome back to Underdog Stuff, live radio show and podcast. Today's episode: WTF part 2. A lot of things having people say WTF. And so we talked about them, but, you know, we live in a very digital world. And I don't know about you, but it's been a little hectic on social media since Trump's been in office. Who you agree with, disagree with, people making crazy comments. It can get a little bit heavy and even overwhelming, actually. There's been some days where I'm just like, should I unfriend this person? Should I turn social media off? What should I do? So I started to try to think about some situations that have literally come up for me in the past week and how I've been handling them, and love to hear your thoughts on how you deal with today's WTF moments and sentiment when it comes to how you interact with people on social media. So, a couple things. If I get a comment where someone makes 10,000 points and about 9,999 of them are just like crazy, ludicrous, racist, not coherent, you know what I do with those?
What?
Nothing. When you got that much going on, it would take me writing a book to address every single point. I'm just going to ignore it. It's too much. Just it, like, if someone's that off the map and, like, all over the place, I'm like, I'm not even trying to engage with them. Not going to do it. If someone makes a point that I disagree with and maybe in a poison point of view, but it's like one thing, it's like, cool, let's address it.
Right.
Right? Because then it's like, for instance, we had someone make a point, right? Joe made, like, there was like one point made. Cool, let's address that point. If it gets like a novel, I'm going to be like, yo, stop writing, call me or come see me, but we don't need to get into a like a back and forth when like you're all over the place. So I appreciate when someone like Joe, who may have a poison point of view, brings up like one or two points and then we can debate them. Now, if someone says something that's just racist, over the top, and they show themselves to be someone that just isn't a good human being, I say let them know and then move on.
But what do you do when somebody does not denounce the head of the KKK and they control the country? How do you move on from that? And you have to see it while you're on social media, and you have to deal with people on social media reacting to that because they have somebody in power sharing their same viewpoint.
Yeah, so I think that's a very fair point. I often say, you know, one of the things that helps keep me sane, and I think other people sane, is creating your boundaries. So to use Facebook as an example, you can unfriend folks who, if that stuff that they're putting on their timeline has you like just, you're not feeling it, you can like stop seeing it. However, I don't believe you should stop seeing opposing points of views. Mm. So I believe in, you can set boundaries of, for example, I can go listen to conservative talk radio host Mark Levin when I choose to. It's a valve that I can turn on and turn off at my choice. I can go turn on Fox News when I choose to, as opposed to if I leave my timeline with folks who at any given time, I just may open my computer and then like or phone and stuff just starts inundating me and it like throws me off. To your point, I've now lost control of when I let in the other poison point of view. But I'm not saying, but you should always be open to it, but take some more control of when you actually ingest it or digest it.
I see.
You know what I'm saying? So I want to be clear. I'm not saying don't listen to opposing points of view, but create boundaries of when you actually go get it, as opposed to sometimes it just being unfiltered and brought to you.
Right, in order to just sort of preserve your mental well-being, yes. Essentially.
Yes. You know? So to preserve my mental well-being, I've turned off a lot of that stuff social media-wise, but I still consume a lot of opposing points of view, but it's on my time and it's in mediums where I get to dictate how long of or how much of the article I read or how much of that podcast I listen to.
It's one thing that I find quite difficult to do is to resist the urge to constantly, you know, reply to opinions with facts, because what social media has done right now is it has given a lot of people with opinions that they truly do believe are facts. And, you know, they're making assumptions about people from different cultures of theirs. They are making proclamations about a government that they think that they want, you know. They're making inaccurate statements about history that can be easily sort of disproved. And they're using these inaccurate statements to prove their opinions, you know, and it's very difficult to just like constantly ignore that because you're, you know, now, I mean, it seems like you can't go a day or two without seeing a tweet as a headline on a front page of a newspaper or, you know, or editorial. So how do you really escape it?
Well, and I think there you will not escape it, but you can limit it. And I think, and I know Kirsten will appreciate this comment I'm about to make, which is social media isn't set up for the mood of the country, the disagreements that people are having, the conversations that people want to have. And I think sometimes we've fallen into this also premise of like it's set up for us to win. It's not set up to win. It's better to have a phone call, or an in-person sit down, to me, when things get like, if the person's going left for too many stuff, it's just like, say to them, hey, I'm not feeling it. Let's talk or let's drop it. Like, you can make that request because social media is actually not set up for us to win. And I'm going to say us, I mean all of us, meaning to have these in-depth conversations and things like that. So folks have to also realize, like, it's not meant to work for this conversation. And guess what? It's doing a good job of not working.
Yeah.
And so more phone calls, more live conversation, more town halls, things like that are definitely helpful.
Yeah.
So with that, let us know how you are dealing with social media these days, especially when it seems that it is very political, a lot of division going on, and a lot of emotion.
A lot of emotion.
A lot of emotion involved. And even I admit that I'm still figuring out day to day, like how to do it and who to block and who not to block and when to say stuff back. So you aren't alone if you're still also struggling with how to do it. But make requests, create boundaries. It's helpful. With that, let's shift to some good things. The best of the best things. Like, and I don't.
It must be coming.
It's a best of the best. So, Kirsten Magwood, who is part of the Underdog Stuff team, recently launched her talk radio show here on WHCR 90.3 FM, The Voice of Harlem, called Best of the Best. And you should listen to Best of the Best, which is, when does Best of the Best air live for folks who want to check out your show?
Best of the Best actually has the old Underdog slot. It is midnight to 2 a.m., which is technically Wednesday morning, but it feels a bit like Tuesday night.
Okay, so 11:59 Tuesdays or 12 a.m. Wednesdays?
No, it's 12 a.m. Wednesdays.
Okay.
It's Wednesday morning.
All right.
12 a.m. to 2 a.m.
Very cool. And just so folks know, what is Best of the Best about?
We talk about the best. We actually have just a positive spin on all things that are going on in politics, pop culture, and technology. We try to look at the good angle. Like, isn't it exciting that Bannon is out of there? Like, I'm actually really happy about it. So I talk about things that I'm pretty psyched about and hope that you get psyched about, too, and at least looking at things from the glass half full perspective.
Very cool. And after the past few weeks of WTF Part 1 and Part 2 today, it would be helpful to maybe look on the bright side of things. And with that, do you have an actual best of the best type topic or question for us today?
Well, right, the best of the best, we always kind of tend to close with like something that was the best ever, or the best of the week, or the best of the month. I actually have two best of questions. One, I guess, is kind of on this topic, which is, you know, there was an interesting debate that happened recently where I think it was, oh gosh, I'm going to get the rapper wrong. Amanda Seales, a female rapper who's white, asked, what can she do? Dear black people, how can we as white people fight racism? And Amanda Seales snapped back and said, you know what? It's not our job to tell you white people what you need to do to get over your problem. You need to talk to your people and figure that out. Now, I thought that answer, I certainly empathize and I feel that way a lot of days, but I'm not sure if that's really the best answer. What do you guys think is sort of the best way to, you know, address white people who want to be allies, who want to empower black people, who want to stand in solidarity? What is the best way to be an ally?
Well, first of all, I love that you said rapper Amanda Seales.
Because she's a comedian. She's not the rapper I was talking about. She's responding to a rapper. Like you, don't sleep on Amanda Seales. Amanda Seales got bars. She can flow.
I know. But that's funny that somebody would classify her as that. But she's a comedian. She's also on Insecure for people who don't know who she is.
She's an old school Harlemite. She used to live right up the street. That's my peeps from way back in the day. So anyway, I love Amanda's spirit and spunk, always an activist, always intelligent. And so she went in.
So in terms of ways that non-people of color can stand with people of color as allies, I would say, first of all, have a heart-to-heart conversation with a person of color, you know, just listen, I think would be step one. Just express genuine interest and listen. And I think you'll get it from there. That would be my tip.
No, I love that. And for folks who may be uncomfortable with having those one-on-one conversations, because I know sometimes it takes a little build-up to get there, that I agree that if you're not ready to listen in a one-on-one, then start listening to programming. Or there's shows like Code Switch. There's VerySmartBrothers.com. There's outlets out there where you can start to get the perspective of what it may be like to be a Black American in this country. And so I often say to folks who are non-Black, you can be an ally by listen instead of defend. So don't let don't be defensive. Listen, to your point, Asha. The other would be Google the history.
Right.
Like when someone says something, like literally just, you can go to Google. Like I don't think people truly grasp how much you can be an ally by actually just having a greater perspective of like the context of how we got here. Right. And it's just, there's so... Listen to your point, Asha, and also start to know your history and just take little small steps. You see something, Google it just to get a little bit more information. Like, well, who was Robert E. Lee? Or when did the statue go up? When did they start this process? Did they do it? Yeah, there was a city council. They made a vote. Like, this isn't like people just randomly coming to take their history. They talked about it in the way democracy was built. They established a commission. They then voted as a city council, and then they went through the appropriate steps. There's currently an injunction with the court. They're working through that. Like, this isn't some...
I know, and once you realize, I think, you know, what I think will be most eye-opening for some people is that once you realize how the system has been systematically set up to keep certain pieces of information from you about... non-people of color, you know, when you start actually doing the research, and the I think the question that most people are going to ask themselves is, why didn't we learn this? Why didn't I know this? Right? And I think that to me is both the question and is the answer, you know?
Yeah. But and I'll say one other thing, and this is slightly less of a request, but more of an observation. I think that in 2017, Americans have lost perspective on how horrific slavery was and the impact that it still has today on us. And somehow, and people use the Hitler and the Holocaust as an example of like, oh, there's no statues of Hitler up in Germany. And like somehow people get like how bad and horrific that was. And yet somehow there's just like this level of consciousness of like, yeah, it happened, but things are better now.
Yeah.
And so my wish to folks is to really get connected to like how horrific it was, slavery, and how its impact is still present today.
Exactly.
Post-traumatic slavery disorder is real. Just like we talk about the Armory and post-traumatic stress disorder, we have the same problem as descendants of slavery. It's in our DNA. It's in the culture. It's in the heritage that people are still fighting to keep alive with these statues. And when you talk about when these statues came up, it's critical to understand that they were at moments, at pivots, when the Black community was advancing. There was an organization, which you'll see in a lot of these statues, called the Daughters of the Confederacy. And they worked to change books as well as create these monuments to their ancestors and to a legacy that lost. Since when do the losers of the war get to dictate the story going forward? That's what kind of holding on to these statues and having as many Confederate statues as there are Union statues. I mean, it's sending a false message about the relevance of the Confederacy as it again was defeated and decided that, you know, that whole mentality was a bit un-American. The other fascinating thing in terms of what you said, Gregory, I agree with you. I mean, I agree with Amanda at the end of the day. I feel like there's times when I can have heart-to-heart conversations with people who I have relationships with. But like in terms of like in general, just what white people need to do, not my personal white friends who may have some questions or issues, which my friends who are white are all hella woke. So I don't really have this kind of problem anymore. But, you know, I think in terms of Googling it and understanding the history, like people aren't just mad about nothing. So why don't you go down the rabbit hole and try to figure out why are Black people mad? In fact, if you put in why are Black people mad in Google, I bet you get some interesting information. I just think, and it was Lady Gaga. It was Lady Gaga, who's hardly a rapper, who Amanda Seales was addressing.
And, you know, rightfully so, it's like, yo, you got some spare time, Ms. Gaga. Why don't you take a moment, do some history, pick up a degree in African history, African-American history, if you really want to know what's up. You know, I don't think these little side conversations that people want to engage you in bars and stuff. You know, I keep getting stopped in these days and times by very, I'm sure, well-meaning white people who want to have race conversations and spout off their ignorance and insecurities. And I just don't have the patience to engage that sort of thing. So, yes, hit the Google, man. Yes. Hit the Google. Hit the Schomburg Library here in Harlem.
Google saves
lives. It's a fabulous resource. Schomburg Library here in Harlem will give you all of the information you need about racial oppression across the diaspora.
Yes. Cool. So, best of the best.
Yeah.
Every Wednesday at 12 a.m.
Technically, yes.
Tuesday night.
Tuesday night. But 12 a.m. on Wednesday morning.
Yeah, we're like a morning show if you're in Paris. We're like a late night show if you're in LA. We're just slightly inconvenient if you're in New York, which is where we air. But that's okay. You can catch us also on Facebook Live and join the conversation. We'd love to hear the best of your stuff. Now, I have a question that's a much more trivial kind of best of question. What was the best thing you guys did this week? I mean, because we talked about a lot of bad stuff this week. So, like, on the lighter note, what were the best things you experienced in this gosh-awful weird week?
I've had a number of serendipitous events occur over the past.
You know, it's my favorite word in the English language, serendipity.
I love that word.
Me too.
Just, you know, some very sort of things that I was in the right place at the right time.
Yes. Ooh, what happened, girl? Tell me.
It's too much to get into right now.
It's
been very sort of feels like positive energy. Awesome. Has been sort of circling around.
Okay, what's
for the week.
Best of the best things? Come on, can you be the best of serendipity?
No, I mean, there's just so much. There's just, it's been a lot of very good things that have happened this week. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And for me, the best thing that's happened this week is that it became official that I got my new apartment in Harlem.
Yay.
And that I will be moving tomorrow.
One floor up.
Cue up Big Pimpin'.
But with, some nice outdoor space. So I am excited about my move, and that definitely was a highlight of my week. So with that though, we're moving on up. To the close of the show.
Yeah.
I'm going to do one quick word association game because folks like that, and we should do like one word or phrase. You get to say three. Do I need to tell you the rules of this?
No.
Okay. Well, I do because you guys never follow it, but
I think that my inability to follow rules is part of my charm.
Ask the police.
All right. Today's word or phrase where you get to answer with three words is self-care. Who's going first? Three words.
Not today, Satan.
Okay.
Ultimate act. Ultimate rebellious act.
Cool. My three words would be do it often.
Yeah.
And during these times, self-care is very important. With that, it's time for Uninhibited.
Yeah. Dun, 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 dun.
Gregory, you looked at me weird when I said mine was not today, Satan. Are you thinking because I meant that I'm not going to care for myself today? No. I need to clarify that.
It was a strange response.
No, because for me, like, self-care. No. Because for me, no. Let me explain it.
I was trying to learn from the jokes and you're like, don't interrupt you. So I was like,
Let me explain it. Because that's how I care for myself, is that I don't take things on, you know? So, like, how do I actually exhibit self-care? When things are happening around me, I don't, like, take it on. I don't absorb that energy. So, like, how do I actually express self-care is by saying, you know what? Not today, Satan. You're not going to get me with that. You're not going to catch me with that
today.
Got
it. By creating your boundaries.
By creating my boundaries.
Okay. I'm glad you clarified.
Creating good boundaries.
Yes.
I get that. Not today, Satan.
Not today. You're not going to get me today with that one.
Okay. I'm with you now.
I felt like I had to clarify that.
I'm
kind of like that threesome joke last week.
Yeah. I was like, yo.
Some things just need to be clarified.
Time out. I need folks to know. All right. So now, the uninhibited question of the show.
Yes, so you didn't get a hint this week. We will say that.
No, I didn't.
No, you did not get a hint this week. But The theme today is all about WTF, right?
Yes.
And I would love to know, you know, I kind of know we've, over the course of us playing Uninhibited, we've talked a little bit about your turn-ons and your turn-offs when it comes to people from the opposite sex. And what I would love to know is a specific example of the last time you were with a person, were with someone you were pursuing, and you just, they did something or said something that made you be like, WTF?
Something that made me. That's a good one.
Better answer it.
Yes. I actually left too much time for Uninhibited today. Let's see. Something that.
A woman you were dating, a WTF moment. What was it?
I would say there was once a young lady I was dating where they were, had trepidation about me going down this path. Remember, a couple years ago, I was going to leave my job. And so to some woman I was dating, it was like, oh my, like, you have a good job. Like, why are you going to leave? Like, I don't understand. And so the thing that made me go WTF is she was like, I'm not really down with someone who wants to like go do this entrepreneur thing and like the entertainment industry and you trying to make it as that, like they weren't, they were like, nah, bruh, like not feeling it. And literally I was like, you're not going to date me because I want to go out and do my own thing. I want to pursue this entertainment business. And she was like, for one, entertainers be out and about. So there's always issues of fidelity and things like that, lifestyle. Then also the thing of like, I don't want to be with a starving artist thing going on. So it was like the realities of in dating that it presented with me, there were going to be some women that I might meet that might be like, you know what, where you're headed to them is kind of whack.
Mm-hmm. That is so,
that's so real.
No, but it's real.
Like, I think that men don't ever consider that. So I think it's really interesting.
No, there's two
components. Men don't consider that.
There's two components.
They always feel emboldened. Like, I mean,
because there's a component of security and stability, right? When someone has something stable and then chooses to like create something. And then there's also the potential of like, you know, some people have rules. They're like, well, I don't date basketball players. Why don't date this type? Because they're like, they have a certain perception of those people. So it was a WTF moment of something that I thought was so great that for some women came with like, actually, I'm gonna keep it moving.
I just read a quote the other day that said when someone reads entrepreneur on Tinder, they automatically assume the person's a drug dealer.
Well, I think it's also
and
pretty.
I was like, well, dang, oh, maybe.
I think it's also pretty funny because it's not like Gregory was quitting his job to become a rapper and to like make his mixtape. Like, she's like, you're going, entertainers are on the run. Like, the guy like set himself up financially with real estate and is trying to be a life coach and an on-air personality, not like,
but you know, Gregory probably mentioned his basketball skills.
Oh, she was not with him shooting in the gym.
You tried to join the radio team. You go have the cheerleader.
The radio team.
She saw the writing.
Wasn't
on
with
the
me
wall.
Shooting in the gym.
Right.
All
right.
With that, again, very, very good Uninhibited question. And thank you, Kirsten, for the best of the best questions. As you can check out her show on 11:59 Tuesday nights PM.
No,
into midnight.
It comes on a midnight on Wednesdays. I was born on a Wednesday. I'm embracing the
Hold on, this is how you do it. Midnight on Tuesdays and 9 p.m. Pacific Central
Time. We come on real early on Wednesday morning. If you're on Paris, in Paris, we're your morning show. If you're in L.A., we're your evening show. Here in New York, we're just slightly inconvenient for the night owls.
Fair
okay?
enough. And you'll find another live episode of Underdog Stuff next week at 1 p.m. But if you miss any of the show or any past shows, our podcast is available on iTunes, Podomatic, Stitcher, Google Play. Search Underdog Stuff with Gregory Neesmith. Thank you for going on the journey today, for the callers, for the Facebook Live comments, and of course to the Underdog Stuff team in the building. And I leave you with my favorite quote: underdogs, can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody. Until next week, peace. Thank you for listening to Underdog Stuff with Gregory Neesmith, live radio show and podcast. The live show is every Sunday, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can watch it live on Facebook.com/Gregory Neesmith or listen live on WHER 90.3 FM, the Voice of Harlem radio station. And new podcast episodes are published every Monday and Wednesday on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Lively Play, and Podomatic. Underdogs, keep going. And remember, can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody.